over time, I realized I really didn't like being just an order taker, really doing like volume recruiting where you're just like throwing stuff at the wall to see what sticks. One, I felt like I was wasting my own time. I was wasting time of candidates. I was wasting my manager's time because I wasn't being as intentional about being a partner. And so I tried to kind of slowly shift that in the way that I approached my relationships with managers. I tried to be a little bit more relational with them.
Hey, I'm Devin Michael, and this is Higher Quality, the show where I sit down with the movers and shakers of talent acquisition to hear their talent triumphs, their hiring horror stories, and genuine opinions about the recruiting industry. So on today's episode of Higher Quality, I got to talk with Beth Wolf, who is the Senior Director of Recruiting at a company called Daxco. They are a software company specifically for health and wellness brands. So they kind of power the back end of those brands. And she's been there a long time. She's one of the few recruiters that I've met that has rose the ranks and stayed where they're at and loved it at a company for, you know, almost 10 years now. So the thing that you're going to get from this episode is really diving into alignment with your company, getting strategic, aligning with your hiring managers, making sure that you're not just a glorified order taker, you are a talent acquisition partner. So if that's important to you and you're trying to make that next step into building your employer's perception of you, this is a really important episode to listen to or watch if you're watching. So let's jump in. All right. So Beth, you are the Senior Director of Recruiting at Daxco, and I am notorious for knowing a very little about companies and about roles. I like to play very ignorant, like I don't know anything. So for my benefit and for the audience's benefit, like, tell us what your role entails, because maybe there's something special in there that I don't know. And then tell us about Daxco and what you guys do.
So as you mentioned, I lead the recruiting team at Daxco. I have two recruiters who report up through me and an intern. My recruiters, I have one in the US and one in India, as we have an office there. What Daxco does is we provide software and solutions for the health and wellness industry. So when you think about a gym or a fitness center that you go to and you've signed up for, they typically have some sort of software that helps them manage your membership and process your payments and do all those types of things. And those are the types of services that we provide and software that we provide. It's really neat and interesting, ever-changing industry.
Yeah. So how many people are in the company total?
We have over 800 now. And I can remember joining at like 160.
I have to imagine having a team of two is a little tight.
Yeah, we're pretty lean. And it's been all over. I've had a team of four before. But as we know, the market's been a little bit all over the place the last 3 years. So we've like increased our team when the hiring was crazy for a little bit there in 21 and 22. And then unfortunately had to decrease our team over the last year because hiring kind of went down a little bit. So I'm actually a little bit more in the weeds right now as far as like a rec load and that sort of thing than I have been over the last several years.
Gotcha. So I also imagine this is very much kind of your standard technical recruiting roles.
Mostly, yeah. So we're doing a lot of like software engineers. You know, obviously we're a tech company, but we have other roles. We have marketing and sales and support and all those things as well.
It looks like you started in recruiting, but was that actually your first job?
No, actually, like a lot of people, I landed in recruiting. You know, I feel like there's not typically, I mean, there's an HR degree, but very little like recruiting focused, right? I actually, years and years ago, I think it's 16, 17 years ago now, I applied for like a receptionist administrative assistant job that I did not get. And they called to reject me. And when they called to reject me, they said, but we've got this temp recruiting assistant role if you are interested. And I said, sure. I didn't know a thing about it, but I was like, let me try it. And I got into it and I was like, this is kind of cool. And I was determined to make them like me and hire me full time. And literally on the last day of my contract, they made me a full-time offer for a recruiting coordinator position. And that's essentially how I got into recruiting because I didn't get the receptionist job.
That's a cool story because you kind of got the better job.
Yeah. So, and it put me, you know, on a career path that I didn't have on my radar at all. So kudos, shout out to Carla Scott, who gave me my start. She like, for some reason, saw something in me.
Was that at Jacobs Technology or was that a different role?
Yeah, it was previously Tybrin, but it was acquired by Jacobs, but yeah.
So when did you start to like feel like you were getting expertise, I guess? And what was that shift to where you're like, okay, I want to do this. I want to manage people.
When I moved to Birmingham, I went to work for a recruiting agency. And if anybody's like worked both a corporate and agency, you know, agency is just so fast paced and kind of you make what you eat or you eat what you make or whatever, like what you kill, like that whole deal. You got to like get after it like every day, all the time. And so I think that's where I really like honed a lot of my sourcing skills and passive recruiting and dig in and understand, you know, what are the needs? How am I going to differentiate myself? Because it's so cutthroat, right? Like agency recruiting is very competitive and, you know, you want your candidate to win, right? So you really have to understand both the needs of the company and the partner, but then also, you know, what's important to that candidate. And I think that's where I started to really understand that understanding drivers for people is really important. So that's where I kind of got some of my recruiting expertise. But after doing that for 3 years, I really wanted to be back in corporate. I really enjoy working for like one customer, essentially like one business, and having a really deep knowledge of who you're working for and working with. Daxco was actually like one of those dream companies that I had had on my list for a long time. And I remember like being so nervous to interview here because I was thinking, oh my gosh, I really, really, really want this job. So I was so excited in 2014 when I started working here. And at the time I had honestly like zero desire to be a leader. I just wanted to be a doer. I like recruiting. I liked being in the weeds. I like working with managers and, you know, just the day-to-day stuff. And I didn't want to necessarily be responsible for other people. I just kind of always saw that like some of the hard parts of leadership as daunting to me. I was like, I can't fire people. Like, what if I have to fire somebody or, you know, have these like really difficult, crucial conversations? And that to me, I wanted to avoid. And so for a long time, I did. And I was just kind of like, no, I'm not interested. Don't worry about it. Like if somebody else is interested in leadership, let them do it. But it literally was just kind of like circumstantial. I think if anybody has been in a like smaller mid-sized company and, you know, they've gone through like turnover, sometimes it's like you're the last man standing or last woman standing in my case, and you've got to step up or leave, right? And so I decided to step up and take on a little bit more leadership opportunity that was just there because the seat was vacated. But what was nice was that Daxco really poured into me and trained me and gave me, you know, different opportunities to stretch myself and grow into that leader, even though I was a little nervous about it to begin with.
It's funny because I feel like a lot of times there's leaders, and especially in more traditional non-tech companies, that are leading the team solely because they've stayed there longer than anybody else. I don't feel like this is one of those situations, right? Because one, you stated that you never intended to lead, and two, you stretched yourself, and three, you've been developed. And I feel like that's a big difference between like what I've seen out there versus like this situation, right? So it's pretty cool.
I think it's important that you are developed though. I think if you're just like thrown into it without like some of the training and development, then that's where you get into those situations where you just have poor leadership and somebody who's really, you know, not providing direction. They're just sitting in a seat essentially.
Was the development side more geared towards leadership generally, or was there like specific recruiting leadership-ish things?
It was more leadership. And yeah, it was more general leadership. The recruiting side was more my own expertise and my own desire to kind of go and continue to stay on top of those things.
Yeah. I mean, obviously offline, we talked about your approach to transparency and strategically aligning with leaders. And when I say leaders, I mean managers in the company. You might call them your clients. Like a lot of people call them clients of theirs, right? Where did that come from, right? So like, where did that start to develop as a unique skill that you possess that I can tell you many do not possess that skill?
Yeah. So
where did that come from? How did that develop?
I think it's evolutionary a little bit in your experience as a recruiter. I think when you're getting started and you kind of feel like, I feel like we all, to the extent, feel like we're faking it till we make it, right? You're like, I don't know anything about this job, or I don't know anything about this hiring manager and that sort of thing. And you're just trying to do the best you can with the information given to you. And over time, I realized I really didn't like being just an order taker because, one, I didn't feel like I was providing a great service to the manager when I was behaving that way, where I was just taking an order and trying to fill in and just really doing like volume recruiting where you're just like throwing stuff at the wall to see what sticks and that sort of thing. And one, I felt like I was wasting my own time. I was wasting time of candidates. I was wasting my manager's time because I wasn't being as intentional about being a partner. And so I tried to kind of slowly shift that in the way that I approached my relationships with managers. I tried to be a little bit more relational with them, right? It's not like just jumping in like, okay, tell me what you need. You know, when do you need it by? What are the skill sets? I mean, a lot of that stuff you can get from, you know, just like a job rec. But I think taking the time to meet with your leaders, whether that's in person, you know, back pre-COVID, a lot of that happened in person and, you know, over coffee and having those conversations and laughing a little bit. I do think, like, I don't know what it is, but to me, like, if I can laugh with my leaders a little bit, even just for 5 minutes before we jump into things, there's that connection that is created, right? Like, it's just a little bit more trust. I've always felt like that's important to kind of start out just like, how are you been? Like, how are things on your team? I haven't talked to you in 5 months. Like, what's going on? What's changed? How's your family? Those types of things I think are important because as you build that bridge and you build that trust, your leaders are going to trust you to do a good job for them. They're not going to second guess everything that you're doing when you're trying to send them candidates or trying to push somebody through. And I think it's really good. I think back to some of my favorite hires over the years are those candidates that you kind of fight for a little bit, right? Mm-hmm. The ones who maybe on paper don't stand out, like maybe their resume doesn't 100% read whatever you're hiring for, but you know, like, this is a good candidate and I'm going to sell them to my leader and make sure that they give them a chance. The only way you're going to be able to sell that and be able to kind of push those types of candidates through is if you've built that trust and you've built that relationship. So I think I kind of figured out early on that I wanted to be able to do that and I needed that trust in order to do it.
What you said is very unique, where I think recruiters across the board, they understand that hiring managers might have the needs and wants that really they don't have a good line between. So there's a blurred line, but like on the recruiter end, they're like, we know what the needs versus the wants are. And the struggle is getting those people pushed forward. They do hit a lot of this, maybe not everything you're looking at, but like they hit it. And the thing that bridges the gap is trust. I never thought of that part. That's cool. Have you run into a situation where like, you might want to have a process change? It's one of those things that's like, hey, this is the way we always done it, like that whole battle. And what did that look like? And how do you overcome that situation?
Yeah, I mean, I've been here at Daxo now just shy of 10 years. So in 10 years, we've probably changed processes multiple times. The market shifts, technology changes, you know, just trends change and how we kind of operate and trying to be modern in the way that we approach recruiting. So you have to be open and willing to change. And I think a lot of that starts with having good relationships with senior leadership, right? Because if you're trying to drive change from the bottom up, it's really, really difficult. You've got to start at the top. So I've been super duper fortunate in having really great leaders, both on my team and at the executive level. I've had great relationships. I'm on my third CEO now at Daxco, and every single one of them has been instrumental to me and my own development, but to my team, because they have all believed that recruiting is important. They have all bought in to say, like, we want to make this an important part of who we are. It's part of our culture to hire, develop, and retain the best talent. Like, that's one of our values. I'm really fortunate that way. And so I think having the opportunity to get buy-in anytime we've had to make changes, whether it be to a process, to a technology, we've changed like ATS systems, we've added AI systems, we've dabbled with like video interviewing and, you know, all sorts of different things that we have added or changed over the years have all been fully supported by leadership and encouraged to, you know, their direct reports so that it makes my job easier on that change management side.
Gotcha. Yeah, that helps.
For sure. And I mean, and you have to use like every avenue available to you and know that I think you just have to go into it too with like a really good attitude and know that you're going to have to say this 30, 40, 50 times. Like you're going to have to say it on Slack. You're going to say it on email. You're going to say it in the meetings that you have. You're going to have somebody reach out to you and go like, I didn't even know we changed this, even though you communicated it 12 different ways. And you just have to be patient and know that that's okay, because everyone in the business may not be recruiting at the time that you send out these messages. So they're ignoring them. It's not important to them at that point in time. It's important to them 6 months down the road when they have an opening on their team and they don't know the new process, even though you feel like you've over-communicated it. So you can't be impatient. You have to just kind of understand and walk them through it and know that it's a process to change things.
When you look at the challenge of not being the order taker, like you're absolutely right, building rapport, and this is stuff I've heard from one other guest on the show that we dove into this topic too. And it's all about like how you approach that, we'll call it intake meeting, right? I think he said he eliminated the term.
We actually just did that. We did the same thing. You have to rebrand, right? You rebrand. We don't call it an intake meeting.
Yeah. So how do you, my question though, and I guess my challenge is, that sounds good. We can rename it all day. We can have 5 minutes of rapport building up front. But when it comes time to talk about the job, it still feel, my gut tells me it's, a recruiter still feels like it's, okay, tell me about the job that you want me to go do. How do we make that part a strategic partnership when it's them that needs the job, if that makes sense?
Yeah. So, I mean, it definitely is them that needs the job. I think it's in how you approach it, right? So, again, yeah, we rebranded it. We call it strategy sessions. Let's strategize together. Let's whiteboard this. Like, how are we going to approach getting you this candidate? So, it's not just like, what do you need? I'm going to go get it. So, it's what do you need? And then, you know, I expect myself and my recruiters to come prepared to those meetings to potentially challenge, right? If we're looking at the job description and we're looking at this list of wants and needs, and we're comparing that to maybe the budget that we have for the role, or, you know, if we're looking at the expectations and just saying like, this candidate does not exist, we're going to have those realistic expectations set during that strategy session. We're going to say like, hey, Devin, like you say you want this candidate with XYZ experience and you're paying this, those are not in alignment. So we need to give somewhere, whether that's we need to go get more budget from leadership, or we need to downgrade the expectations of the role, you know, swap out some technologies, whatever that might be. Let's talk about how we can get you somebody on your team that meets your needs, but is also realistic. And we're not going to have this position open for 6 months because we're just struggling to find the candidates. So I think it's being prepared and knowing your market, knowing what you're looking for, so that you can be, you know, a partner. Again, you're there to provide guidance. Most of our managers aren't hiring all the time, right? So they are depending on us to be the experts in our craft and to provide them the information that they don't have.
Gotcha. What systems do you use to like know the market? I'm not even going to pretend to, I can do this, but I'm not going to. Hopefully you get what I say. Like if they're on JavaScript and all these languages, right? Like how do you know the market like in real time?
We have a system. We use Comp Analyst from salary.com. So we can go in and run a market analysis. We'll also pull information from our HRIS. We use ADP. So we'll pull the information out to see, we're looking not only at externally, you know, what's the market telling us that this is paying for a company our size and our industry. But we're also looking internally, like what are we paying internally for other people in this position? We want to make sure we're not creating any sort of internal discrepancies, making it a situation for ourselves. So, and that's all the information too, again, that we want to bring to those strategy sessions to ensure that our leaders are aware, because sometimes they're just not aware. They don't realize like, oh gosh, you know, my budget for this position is way off from what I'm paying internally or vice versa. And we need to adjust.
Well, this is interesting. This is the most nitty gritty I've gotten on the strategy session, right? But do your recruiters know beforehand? Talent leaders listening to this, they're like, okay, I want to do these. Like I'm all in, I'm strategy sessioning from here on. Do the recruiters need to know before the meeting happens what role they're going to be talking about so they can be like extra prepared, or are they going in fresh eyes to learn?
Yeah, we want to know ahead of time. So we have a process to like get roles approved to open. And once that role is fully approved, at that point, the recruiter will, like, first step in our process is to schedule that strategy session to say, like, hey, you know, the position's approved, like, let's get going on this. And in preparation for that meeting, they're expected to kind of have that info ready so that they can talk through it.
So is it your recruiters that are getting it approved, or is it the hiring managers requesting and getting approved and then it goes to you?
So we have like a JIRA ticketing system that the hiring manager will submit a request for a job opening, and then our recruiter will put that into our applicant tracking system to be approved by our appropriate leadership team and CFO to make sure that everybody's in alignment on budget and the role and everything else.
So theoretically speaking, if I was your head of sales, I could just like on a whim just request AE roles.
You could. It would have to be approved. Again, like they might say, no, this wasn't approved. You know, this isn't something that we had talked about as far as in the budget. So that's why our CFO is looking at all those positions to approve. He'll question it if he needs to.
Yeah. That makes a ton of sense. I have a random question, and it's about titles. What's the difference between senior director and director? Did anything like change?
It's a little bit more around expectations as far as like when I was promoted, right, into a senior director from a director. Some of the expectations are around being more strategic, being more data driven, you know, just some of those more forward thinking types of things, more than just kind of like managing the day to day and doing some budgeting and all of that, but really being a little bit more proactive and forward thinking in the way that I approach the team.
Gotcha. As senior director now, talk to me about some of the areas that are, there's good, bad, and ugly, right? I'm assuming there's probably not ugly in your organization. You know, you're in charge, so it's probably not ugly, but maybe there's some weak areas, some bad areas that you're like, okay, and if my dream recruiting function, this does not belong in it. Like, what are those areas that you're now kind of strategizing towards fixing over the next month, year, whatever it may be?
As far as like fixing, I mean, there's always something that you want to have more bandwidth to get to. And I think for our team, obviously I mentioned at the beginning, like we're pretty small right now. We're pretty spread a little bit thinner than we've been in the past. So I'm hoping one, that we can grow our team back to like a more of a robust team. Ideally, I would love to have us have some, maybe some additional tools that will continue to push us forward as far as DEI recruiting. That's something in the technology realm is always a challenge, something we're always pushing forward. Right now, we have goals around, you know, how many folks that we are getting into our pipeline. We don't necessarily have quotas around hires and that sort of thing, but we definitely want to diversify our pipeline and get as many people in front of that hiring manager that represents our population a little bit better when it comes to technology, when it comes to sales. Those are two of the areas that are predominantly like white male focused, right? And so we're constantly making efforts to diversify the pipeline. And I know there's even more like tools and technology and AI and things that are constantly coming out that I would love to introduce more just to take some of the like heavy lift off the recruiting team when it comes to DEI recruiting, because that can be just very time intensive when you're being really concerted in those efforts.
Yeah. Do you guys do like job boards or job fairs or events and things like that? Or are you kind of like...
We have in the past. We haven't done any as much recently just with us being, you know, a smaller team, and with recruiting, just I feel like being a little market, just being a little weird recently.
Yeah.
And having almost like more applicants than we know what to do with right now. We almost like don't want to introduce more applicants or just more of the same applicants. So the events that we have done or things that we are looking at are more diversity focused. So those are some of the things that are more on our radar than just like regular job fairs or like career fairs at colleges and things like that. In the fall, we're more concerned about going to a few engineering fairs, but like HBCUs, we're headquartered in Birmingham, Alabama. So what's nice is we have a lot of HBCUs within driving distance, and we can easily hit up several to do things like that.
Yeah, there's a couple things that come to mind. Like, I've yet to go. It's like been my dream conference since I started to qualify. It's called Afrotech.
I've looked into that, Afrotech. The difficulty right now is like budget, right? Like our budget right now isn't huge. And some of those events are huge and they're very well attended. So the price for entry just to have like a tiny booth, like just a little table, it's pretty pricey. And it's one of those things that's a little difficult for a company of our size.
Oh, yeah. And the other one is actually a email, like an email community called Diversify Tech. And they do little sponsored job things, which is cool. Yeah, those are two, the only two that I know that people use. But I think that's a real, like, a very interesting direction to go. This is not, I cannot confirm that this is factual, but I'm going to put it out there as like, I'll call it an opinion. My brother, our CEO, we did explore like what it would look like to do DEI specific things with our tool. And the thesis was what he had seen. I think he had seen like an article or something that showed when there's one person, local person of color in your candidate pool, the likelihood of them getting hired is like relatively low. But when there's two, it like jumps up crazy. I was like, oh, wow, that's wild. So like we thought about starting a company where it's like our job is to get you two. Like, we're going to promise you two every time.
Because it's so true. And I don't know why that is. I couldn't begin to tell you why that is. But I feel like it's true. And I feel like that's on both like any sort of like minority, whether it's women in technology or it's people of color. I find that to be true. Like, we recently had a director of product position that we hired for, and we hired a female into that. And I was excited about that, to get, you know, a leader over product. But yeah, it was like, I was very intentional. Like, we're going to have several women like interview, because I feel like if it's just the one, for some reason, it just doesn't work out in the same way.
Yeah. I'll ask you a hard question to probably wrap up the segment of the show, because it's hard for me even when people ask, but how do you think about doing DEI intentionally without feeling like you're doing what, you know, someone might call it like reverse discrimination, right? Like, I'm seeking out this group that we don't have represented at this company, which maybe to some feels like I am not wanting you, right? So what is your answer to people that might be against that practice, which for the record, I am not, but I know there's people that feel that way.
And I've answered this question before, because I mean, I have this question, or we talk about it a lot. It's funny. My husband's actually a senior recruiter at a company as well. We just keep it all in the family. So we talk shop a lot. But I think what it comes down to is we don't lack for other candidates, right? So I don't lack for white male candidates when I'm searching for a UI engineer. Like right now, I'm recruiting for a senior UI engineer. Probably 90% of my applicants, which we've had well over 500, are white males. Odds are we're going to either hire or like interview plenty of white males for this role. What my goal is to introduce at least a couple of people who are people of color, who are females, into that pipeline to at least give them an opportunity, because there's plenty of others. We don't have a lack of the other. So I feel like I don't feel guilty or any sort of way about intentionally seeking out diverse candidates to just spice it up a little bit when there's plenty of others. Like, I don't have to intentionally go and source for white males. They're there. They're applying in droves and they're qualified. And, you know, so it's not like I'm lacking.
Gotcha. No, I very much appreciate that way of answering it. Now I have my answer. Let's switch gears, because we could keep going and that's always dangerous. So the hot seat. So I'm going to ask you 5 questions quick. I read as fast as I can. It's not really that fast. And then you give me your answers and then we'll wrap it up. So are you ready for your 5?
I'm ready.
All right. First one's easy. One person that's changed your life in talent acquisition.
Carla Scott. She gave me my start. She saw something in me.
I figured that would be it. All right. Most challenging role you've ever had to recruit for.
This is so random, but there's a position that we recruit for, and we recruit for it pretty often, but it always is like, oh, we have a position for a customer service advocate, but it's an accounting specialist. So we are always looking for people who have accounting degrees who don't want to be accountants. So it's like that person who maybe got through like 3.5 years of accounting, and then we're just like, you know, I really don't want to do this job. So yeah, the customer service advocate for accounting is just a challenge, because it's like, you're looking for somebody with this certain degree who doesn't want to be that. So it's just a really bizarre job that every time we open it, I'm like, ugh.
It's like you're going beyond the job description into the persona, which is always hard.
Yes. So it's just a really awkward kind of position sometimes.
Where do you go to stay updated on the latest trends and changes in the TA landscape?
LinkedIn is one, although I feel like LinkedIn is getting to be a little bit of an echo chamber. I'm still a Twitter person. I was on Twitter from like 2009 or whatever, and I still feel like there's a lot happening out there that is interesting and pushing things forward. So, yeah.
Love it. What's your go-to interview question if you could only pick one?
What's your motivation? Like, you know, like what are your motivation and looking for? Like, what's important to you? I love asking that question.
Last one, what's a common talent acquisition activity that needs to die?
Reference checks.
Why is that?
Because I think they're pointless, because who's going to give a bad reference? Like, let me give you this person who's not going to say something good about me. No, right. Not going to do that. Right. So it just feels like a really pointless thing to do.
Love it. Well, this was great. I say this not often, which is I actually learned a ton in this interview. So I really appreciate your insight and how you've led and how you've grown in one company and come so far already. And I'm sure going much further, but I'm not alone. I'm sure other people want to stay connected to you. I'm sure they want to learn from you continuously. So why don't you tell people if they want to be connected to you, how they should go about doing that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely on LinkedIn. So you can find me at searching for Beth Wolf at Daxco. You know, if you want to learn more about Daxco, we have socials, Daxco at Daxco Nation. There's lots of stuff out there. And then, yeah, I'm on Twitter as well.
Which is apparently the spot that you became that person. From what I hear, you were Twitter famous before it was real.
Oh, I don't know.
But awesome, Beth, this has been great. I'm sure we'll stay connected, but this has been awesome. And if you that are listening also thought this was great, make sure to like, subscribe, wherever you're listening. Bonus points for those that are on Spotify, because that's the best option. But anyways, make sure you like, subscribe, so that you stay in touch with this show, coming out with one every other week. Until then, we'll see you next time.